The Babylon Project podcast was our last best hope for reruns. It failed. But in the year of the Shadow War, it became something greater. Our last best hope for fandom. The year is 2017. The place, the Babylon Project podcast.
This is Maggie Egan, your ISN news anchor, and you're listening to the Babylon Project podcast. Thanks for listening.
Hi there, Babylon 5 fans. Welcome to another episode of the Babylon Project podcast. This is a somewhat froggy Raul Wibera tonight, and joined as usual with my two good friends, Jim Arrowood and JP Harvey. How are you boys tonight?
I'm real good. How about you, JP?
Doing great here, better than last week. Most of my hoarseness is gone, and it looks like Raul has it now.
Yeah, thanks for the
gift. Yeah, see, you guys are really wimpy. See, I'm a teacher. I have a monster immune system.
You live in the incubator.
Yeah, you tell me about it.
he'll be the one survivor.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you guys, I'm going to be counting on you to help carry me a bit here. Looking on the bright side, it'll keep my big mouth shut for a bit more. So, what episode are we talking about tonight?
Well, tonight we are looking at third season, episode 11, Ceremonies of Light and Dark.
Okay. So, this is sort of the follow-up from the Lots of Boom of last week.
Yeah.
Well, while I suck on some Earl Grey, Jim, how about going ahead and getting us straight into a review?
Here we go.
Archive. Access. Initiated.
A small group of Night Watch members in hiding on the station kidnap Delenn and Lenan, one of the commanders of the Minbari fleet, keeping watch over Babylon 5. It is their intention that they will use the pair to force the Minbari to leave the station and open the way for Earth Force to take over. Marcus finds where the kidnappers are. Sheridan buys some time by pretending to surrender to them. A faked reactor leak forces the Night Watch out of hiding, and Garibaldi leads a group of security in taking them down. Delenn is injured when she intercepts a knife thrown at Sheridan by one of the Night Watch. Delenn makes an attempt to remount the rebirth ceremony she had tried in an earlier episode. It requires that everyone give up something important to them and confess something. While she recuperates in MedLab from the knife wound, the command staff bring the ceremony to her, each giving up their Earth Alliance uniforms and telling her a secret that each one has. While attempting to purge the station's computer system of old passwords in favor of new ones, Garibaldi manages to revive an artificial intelligence program in the computer that displays a somewhat grating attitude toward its operators. Well, there it is.
I like that last part.
I gotta say, stepping into this episode, the after the last two, even though this wasn't a humorous episode, there were a lot of comical elements in there that felt refreshing after the burden of the last two.
Yeah, especially with their computer problems.
Yes.
Yeah.
Character files opened.
So, Jim, who did we have with us tonight?
All right. We start out with William Forward as Lord Reefa is returning, and we've talked about him before. We have Don Stroud as Boggs. This is his second appearance on Babylon 5. The first was as Caliban in the TKO episode, 14th episode of the first season.
And I think, as we said back then, if you've seen any sort of crime drama, police movie, Western from the late 1960s, you've seen this guy.
Oh, yeah. He's been around a lot. Yep. And another note here added by a little birdie. In the early 1990s, Stroud attempted to come to the aid of a man being mugged in Greenwich Village, New York. He wound up getting stabbed like 10 times, including in his right eye, and he'll no longer see out of that eye anymore.
You want to hear something funny?
Okay, I'll tell you what. If anybody can come up with something funny about someone getting stabbed 10 times, then it would be you, Raul.
Well, not fun. They got a crud of criticism from people ragging on Straczynski about the horrible makeup job on Biggs, how fake the scar and stuff was.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Oops.
Now,
Now,
that reminds me of a funny little story.
Told you.
It does. I had a foreign exchange student from Munich in my choir, and I talked her into doing a solo at district contest in German. Okay. The judge said in his comments to her after she had sung her solo that her German accent needed some work.
Oh, gosh.
Yes. So, at any rate.
Yep.
Okay, moving right along.
Moving on.
Paul Perry as the sniper. This is his only appearance in Babylon 5. He's got credits back to 1982, including Stargate SG-1 as Dr. Woods in the episode Frozen, Battlestar Galactica, Epiphanies, Andromeda Strain, the TV miniseries, and in Caprica.
Okay.
All right. And Kim Strauss joins us as Lenon. He has 14 appearances on Babylon 5 in various roles. And the next one is, don't tell anybody this, Harlan Ellison as Sparky the Computer.
No. Oh, we're supposed to save that one for a surprise.
Oh.
The grand curmudgeon himself.
Ah, yes. A man.
This is his first of two appearances, I believe.
Yeah, he's a psychop in another one. But Harlan Ellison, a man that I have a great deal of respect for.
So as I understand it, he basically plays himself.
In this episode, more or less.
Mm-hmm.
And that is our guest cast.
Initiating plot analysis.
Well then, about the episode itself.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, you'll notice Mike's arm is in a cast.
Right.
That's a real cast. They got it done in black. And it's from that twisting you saw in the last episode in the ground battle. But they are shipping out the Night Watch, at least all the ones that they can find.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they pretty well have accepted that there's going to still be some lurking mm-hmm. around here and there.
Right. Just setting up some of the background for the story, the comms are still offline to keep Earth from remote logging in. Doing a remote login and overriding. Mike claims he can reset it. And Sheridan has made the decision. He is, except for something that's going to happen later, he is not going to wear his uniform. His conscience won't let it. And he's going to take his regular tour of the station without an escort.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I think this is a good move by Sheridan because, especially at this point when things are really unsure and up in the air, there needs to be a visible sign of leadership.
Yeah, but Mike's understandably worried. Was it Mike or Susan that was worried about unnecessary risks?
Oh, and I would agree with that, except that, if he walked around with a big security contingent, that probably wouldn't send a very positive message. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's taking some risks, but at the, I think they're justified myself.
And he's wearing a white shirt, so he's a good guy.
Yeah.
While this is happening, Delenn is thanking the Mimbari that had helped. And one of the captains wants to see the station that he put so much on the line to save. And in Delenn and Lanier's conversation, they know what's coming, and their claim is that they are ready to face the darkness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there was a question about prophecy in here, and it's, yep. Delenn was, or Lanier was asking Delenn, I think, and prophecy is a poor guide to the future. And I think that's a real important quote, because you never know what prophecy, what is meant by it when you read it. It's usually quite vague. Mm-hmm. There's no specific things given with it.
Prophecy gives meaning to the events that have happened, I believe is the way someone had phrased it.
Yeah. It's like I got... several years ago, I got on a kick about reading about Nostradamus. I saw some documentary that was hosted by, in any case, it was all about Nostradamus's things, and it was like, wow, this is really cool, and I started reading everything I could find, and it's all pretty vague, really. I read the translations of his thing, and there's a lot of different ways it can be interpreted, so... I don't put a great deal of stock in it anymore. Of course, I'm all grown up now.
And the setup of the episode closes with, what do you expect? Someone is hard-scoping the captain. sniper rifle, center sights, target acquired. And he's stopped by one of his associates.
Yeah, that was a close call.
Yep. After the credits, we find out that Marcus is back. And Delenn is talking to him, talking about planning the rebirth ceremony. And he really doesn't consider himself an Earther, doesn't have a very high opinion of Earth, having grown up in the colony worlds.
Yeah. He just doesn't seem to want a whole lot to do with it at this point.
Yep. Well, this is, I guess, where I have to make the comment about reading the book. What was the title of the book?
To Dream in the City of Sorrows.
Bingo. Thank you. Sheridan, we find out what that later is. He's in uniform for the funeral for the pilots that were lost. Well, not just the pilots, I guess the Marines as well. And from what I understand, the liturgy he reads or he recites is a modification of the, I think it's the naval ceremony.
That would make sense.
And of course, the Star Fury is a modification of the Missing Man formation.
Mm-hmm.
So he's, I know Straczynski went to an effort to try and keep things as fairly accurate, you know, just an extension of current history and historical practices. Mallari seems to finally grow a backbone. Now that he's shut the shadows down, he finally meets with Reefa and shows a little spine, flexes some muscle.
Or at least he thinks he has shut the shadows down.
Right. He's going to put a stop to Reefa's alliance with Morden because... Well, he's afraid the shadows are going to pull them down.
Mm-hmm.
I thought his words to Reefa were bold right from the start, too. This wasn't a kind conversation that eased into tension. Well, something to the effect of, says Londo, I thought it would be good for you to come to me, or something like that.
Right.
But wow, he's not going to ease into this discussion.
No.
Londo has built himself a bit of a power base. And he also has the benefit of having foresight of what is happening thanks to Majel Barrett.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's partly what stiffened him up a bit.
I think it could very well be, because Reefa is not in the picture in her prophecies.
Nope.
And we know Londo's going to get power. So he knows this, so, you know, he doesn't have to beat around the bush.
Which, ironically, is interesting because Reefa's now open about his aspirations to the throne.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I think you're right, because Londo's knows it probably won't be Reefa, so he's having none of that.
And if it is, it's not going to last.
Nope.
Well, and then, you know, to counter Londo's aggressive pushing, Reefa's pretty smug, and he's pretty confident in himself, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then he said, we need the room to expand, you know, in talking about why he's keeping the shadows with him. And that was very disturbing to me because it sounds a lot like we need breathing room.
Mm-hmm.
Germany, yeah. 1938.
Right. Yes.
Very much so.
Yeah.
And Lando manages to get Reefa to agree. Does it very subtly. Poison is subtle.
Right.
Yeah, about as subtle as a crocodile.
By the way, I mentioned humor in this episode. This isn't a funny scene at all, but there was something that I wondered if this was an attempted humor at the beginning of the episode here, and then kind of some more blatant stuff happens later. What were the words? Lando says, only an idiot fights a war on two fronts. I think that, yeah, Lando was saying, mm-hmm. only the heir to the throne of the idiot would fight a war on 12 fronts. And then it was after that, yeah. Reefa makes it clear he's talking about taking the throne.
Yeah.
So is he the heir to the throne mm-hmm. of the idiot?
It's like, who aren't they at war with?
Right.
Actually, I think Lando asks that, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Right. Who aren't we at war with?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who are we or not?
He references neighbors, right, or something like that. Which neighbor do we have anybody bordering us that we're not at war with?
Yeah, and you mm-hmm. know, it may be a bit of a spoiler, but we know that Cartesia is already on the throne, and those right. of us that have seen the series know what Cartesia is about. And I'll tell you what, Reefa doesn't have a prayer.
Yeah, I actually. I hate to say it, but Reefa would be a step up from Cartesia. What we see in season 4.
Yeah, absolutely.
But the poison is an interesting one. The reason it gets the compliance is it sticks around for a while.
Yeah.
Until triggered.
Well, here's what Londo and Reefa's conversation about that entailed.
By drawing our forces into a dozen smaller wars, you have effectively weakened our main line of defense should they turn an eye to Centauri Prime.
They will not do that.
No, they will not, because you are going to take steps to prevent it. And you will start by breaking off your relationship with Mr. Morden.
Oh, Londo. You are a fool. You walked away from the greatest power I have ever seen. And now you expect me to do the same? They are the key to my eventual rise to the throne. Why would I abandon them?
Because I have asked you. And because your loyalty to our people should be greater than your ambition. And because I have poisoned your drink.
Yes.
And it is a very interesting poison. It comes in two parts. Both are harmless on their own, but when combined, quite lethal. The first settles into the bloodstream and the intestinal walls. It stays there for years, silent, dormant, waiting. When the other half of the poison enters the body, the two meet. Have a little party in your cardiovascular system, and suddenly, you are quite dead. Your drink contained the first half of the poison.
Why? Why did you do this?
To guarantee your cooperation. And because sooner or later you would do it to me. Yes, we're returning to the old ways, Reefa. And poison was always the instrument of choice in the old Republic. Being something of a sentimentalist, I got here first.
What do you want me to do?
You have encouraged that fool Cartagia to attack worlds that have no value to us. You will now encourage him otherwise. You will bolster our lines of defense around Centauri Prime, and you have nothing more to do with Mr. Morden. If you do not comply, one of my agents in the Royal Palace will introduce you to the second half of the poison. To your health, Lord Reefer.
You know, the most surprising part of that conversation for me is that Londo has a corps of agents in the palace.
It actually doesn't surprise me. Londo's star has been rising.
Yep.
So
big difference from the ways of a purple robe, jacketed clown.
Right. So a couple episodes back, or last episode, we were observing how Jakar, well, Delenn observed how Jakar is not the same person that he was when she met him 2 years ago. And now I think we can say the same thing about Londo. This guy, something is happening with him. Mm-hmm. And he even shows a little bit of some strategic planning skills. Mm-hmm. You know, he's thinking a lot bigger than Reefa, it appears.
Well, he's no longer the buffoon, and he knows it. And as I said, he already knows his future.
Right.
And when you think about it, really, a lot of the characters are not who they were at the beginning. You know, Delenn has changed.
Obviously.
Yeah. About the only person who has not changed is Kosh.
Right.
Kosh is Kosh.
Susan is still very much Susan.
Oh, well, she stopped complaining about being Russian all the time, though.
No, that's true. And speaking of Susan, she and Sheridan and Mike are busy resetting the system.
Peekaboo.
And, yep. But, you know, Straczynski had made a comment once about the password. He picked the passwords that really describe their personalities.
Okay.
The problem with those kind of verbal passwords, though, isn't sort of once you've used them, it's sort of a one-shot deal.
Yeah.
You know, didn't he, in that process, doesn't he, a part of the recoding or reprogramming is that they have to, I don't think he said reset, but essentially reset their passwords. I thought that was a part of the, and we're left not knowing what the next funny word would be that he might pick.
Well, the system goes down, it's restarting, and we switch to Delenn describing this rebirth ceremony.
Yeah, she tried to do this before, way back in episode 201.
Uh-huh.
Or, no, I'm sorry, I take that back.
Like the second or third episode.
Yeah, it was early.
Very early.
It was early in the second season, but the rebirth ceremony involves each of the participants telling someone a secret that they have never told anyone before.
Mm-hmm.
So she wants to do this, and there seems to be some resistance.
Yeah. No red fruit this time, and no pseudo marriages, at least. No.
And you notice Kosh is keeping a real low profile.
We haven't seen him in a while, have we?
He is staying out of the way, especially for this rebirth stuff. It would have been really interesting to see what kind of secret that dude has.
Well, we've got the Night Watch keeping a low profile. This is where we really get some interaction with Boggs and an idea of what their orders are. But basically, Sheridan has been placed off limits, and instead, their target is Delenn. High-profile assassination, something to try and drive the aliens away.
Yeah.
And the logic in that was, don't kill Sheridan, you'll make him a martyr.
Mm-hmm.
Kill Delenn, because she's at the center of all this, and see if you can make it look like Sheridan is somehow to blame.
Right.
So you can take two out with one shot, essentially.
You know, and at least, though, the Night Watch that we had before that were in uniforms, they at least look somewhat professional. These guys look like nothing but a bunch of thugs.
Right.
I mean, I wonder if they aren't like, you know, in hockey, the goons. Yeah. The goon is a guy you send out on the ice to just start fights.
Right.
And I'm wondering if these guys aren't held in reserve to just be thugs.
You pretty much get that feeling. It's like Babylon Night Watch's own Antifa movement.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, set up Sheridan, take out DeLynn, and have troops ready to come in and take back the station.
Yeah.
And one guy goes beyond being a bunch of thugs. That sniper is just plain creepy.
Oh, yeah.
He's disturbing.
A total nut job.
Yeah. Dim bones.
I know.
I won't try and sing it.
Well, and, you know, that he's describing what he has done in the past.
Yeah.
So
it's not what he's planning to do. It's what he has done.
So not only do we have a bunch of thugs, we've got a psychopath in there mixed in with it.
Mm-hmm.
It's disturbing, too, that none of his colleagues seem to be bothered by him.
Oh,
they just sort of take him as is.
Yeah.
Yep. And that kind of fits up with Jim's comment about this branch of the Night Watch basically being their goon squad.
Mm-hmm.
Well, DeLynn is in search of Marcus in Marcus's what seems to be favorite spot.
Mm-hmm.
Is it me or is he kind of avoiding her?
Yeah, at least her.
yeah. Well, I think he's more avoiding the rebirth ceremony. He can't really avoid DeLynn. I mean, mm-hmm. she is his commander.
And she has no hesitation about going out to find him.
Uh-uh.
I think she sees it that way, too, by the way. It's not, if he's avoiding her, he's avoiding not her, but the questions that she's going to ask. And she unloads one on him here when they sit down and get together.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
What are you afraid of?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Marcus, he just doesn't want to discuss this rebirth thing. He doesn't want any part of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, we get it back to a bit of a lighter moment. This keeps slipping in at the points where you need to lighten things up. The system reboot. Yes.
Oh, hey, Raul, there was one in that scene with Marcus and DeLynn, too.
Uh-huh.
These were kind of salt or pepper, whatever spice you want, sprinkled through. So she says quite seriously, what are you afraid of? And do you remember what his answer was?
I think Jim does.
Oh, Jim? Spiders.
He goes, spiders.
Scared of spiders.
First he says nothing. What are you afraid of? Nothing. Well, spiders. and then they just move on. It's, you know, there's just a little laugh moment right there in the middle of all the tension again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Marcus hides behind that humor. Much the same way Susan does, actually.
Yes.
But yeah, the system reboots as the Great Curmudgeon.
Yeah, more like Don Rickles.
Oh, no. Harlan Ellison. No one can. He's one of a kind.
Oh, yeah.
A real people personality as far as the old AI.
Yeah. Yeah, and it didn't quite work out the way... apparently the people who wrote the code intended.
Yeah, well, he seems to be running the station fine, at least.
Well.
But he's annoying.
Yeah.
Well, DeLynn is busy trying to get people, at least more the leaders, the leadership level of the station, to participate in the rebirth ceremony. And she explains the steps, pretty much what Jim had said earlier. To Londo, and you know, that conversation goes very downhill very quickly.
Yeah, that one goes over kind of like a lead balloon. But you know something? After listening to and seeing part of this ceremony in the past, I have to say that Centauri parties look a whole lot more fun.
Definitely.
Especially if you're stunning in purple.
That was still one of the funniest Londo moments ever.
Yes. It just doesn't seem like anybody is really chomping at the bit to do this thing.
Well, they caught a sample of it from a couple of years ago, at least everyone except Sheridan, because she's not having much luck with Jakar either.
No.
And she drags Marcus along with her on the way to meet that Minbari captain that was supposed to come over, because she's not going to let him walk away from it. And Marcus explains his past. And I think you've got that for us, right, Jim?
Yep.
I wish you would trust me enough to talk to me, Marcus. Why are you so reluctant to take part in the rebirth ceremony?
You asked me to give something up, Delenn. I don't have anything left. It's all gone. My brother was the last of our family, and he died because of my stupidity. He warned me of the shadows. I didn't listen. And when they came, I lost him, our home, the colony where we'd grown up, a woman I was quite fond of. I escaped with only the clothes on my back and went off in search of these rangers that he'd been going on about, because he believed in them and in you. Everything I was, everything I had, all of it died that night. I don't have anything left to give.
Then that is exactly what you must give up. Yes. You have lost much, endured much, sacrificed greatly. But you cling to the memory of your sacrifices, of all the things you have lost or left behind. They drag behind you like chains of your own making. They can have a terrible power over you, Marcus. The power of grief and loss and regret. Yes, you have let go of the people, the places, the things. But you have not let go of the pain. You have not forgiven yourself.
For what?
Being alive.
Survivor's guilt.
Yeah, she nails it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is not something pretty to see.
No, and of course, Marcus's story is a lot more detailed in To Dream of the City of Sorrows.
Yeah, I'm actually really looking forward to discussing that book. I don't know if we will get every single Babylon 5 book or the two trilogies in that book, which are 100% canon.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm really looking forward to that book.
Yeah.
But yeah, Survivor's Guilt, that actually, as we were listening to this, it kind of, one of my closest cousins was a master sergeant in Vietnam. And there's some similarities in his kind of humor and attitude toward Marcus. He was the sole survivor of an ambush.
Mm.
And still carries a lot of the shrapnel around with him. Has to be somewhere else during the 4th of July because the fireworks, I mean, this is what, Vietnam was what, 50 years ago?
Yeah, it's been a while.
And he still has to fight the reflex to dive under the table when fireworks go off. But yeah, the book will make all of this really clear. We finished this little rough segment with a little more roughness. Delenn and the captain walk right into Night Watch's trap.
Oh yeah. That's a big oh crap moment.
Yep. And as we come back from the commercial break, Mike is still trying to fix the computer. But the real concern is Delenn. And shall we say Marcus is a little upset?
Yeah, more than just a little bit. But this, again, is more guilt coming back.
Uh-huh. Boggs finally contacts the captain, gives them 6 hours to get rid of the Mumbari.
Yep. So, yeah, we get another big dose of anti-alien sentiment, thugs and murderers.
Mm-hmm. And Marcus looking for Delenn in pretty much all the wrong places, it seems.
Yeah.
Or maybe all the right places, right? But he goes back and threatens, you know, really threatens his sources or his potential sources.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Marcus, he's a one-man army, that guy.
Yeah.
But, yeah. This is where he says, now I have to wait for one of these guys to wake up.
yep. Right. At some point in this.
I'll tell you what, Marcus is, even when things are really serious, the guy is hilarious.
Uh-huh. Well, his threat that he made was pretty accurate.
Right. I'll be the last one standing, right? Or the only one standing in this room.
Yeah.
Yeah. 5 minutes after that. Right.
He's lamenting because he's got to wait. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't make empty promises at all.
Yeah. In the meantime, Delenn, I don't know if it's supreme confidence or not caring, but she is, or just being brutally honest, but she is really able to get under the skin of the Wingnut Sniper.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Marcus is hilarious. It's lots of repressed anger, and he's not repressed anymore.
Right. Nope, he's letting it all out.
What was the back and forth?
Mm-hmm.
Looks like they trained him well.
Yep.
What did they say to you in training or some such thing, right? They said I was carrying around a lot of repressed anger, and Lanier says, and?
Not repressed anymore.
I'm not repressed anymore.
Nope.
They're both on edge, though, and that kind of leads to a rough moment between the two, which ultimately Lanier makes a rather significant confession to Marcus.
Yeah, he's starting the ceremony early.
Yep. He's in love with Delenn.
I don't think this surprised me as a viewer. The fact that he said it surprised me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you got to wonder how the poor guy's feeling, you know, with her sparking with Sheridan.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Lanier does make the comment about he knows that she's faded for someone else. I think it's, at least to the audience, pretty clear who the someone else is.
Yeah.
But someone does wake up, and, well, before we go to that, Lanier makes a vow about never leaving her side, and Marcus kind of cautions him about the seriousness of something like that, that they have a way of coming back to haunt you. Keep that in mind for season 5.
Okay. And Marcus has another good line here. You can get more with a kind word and a 2x4 than just a kind word.
Yeah. Well, he gets some answers, and he sends Mike's men down to level 14. While Sheridan, with Marcus's information, has a plan. Basically, he sets up the mole, kind of turns the tables around, and fakes a reactor leak.
Now, those guys sure take off when they find when they think that's going on.
Yeah. And Delenn takes a knife for Sheridan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a hard scene.
Yeah, it was a very hard scene. But after that, Sheridan's had enough. And he's not exactly repressed anymore either.
No, absolutely not.
Well, starting to wrap up at least some of the loose ends. Delenn, she is going to be okay. Garibaldi shoots the computer, or at least the speaker.
Yep.
And funny, he's not repressed. Nobody's repressed anymore.
No one's repressed anymore. And they decide that if Delenn can't come to the rebirth ceremony, they're going to bring it to her.
Mm-hmm.
And we get a very awe moment with the John and Delenn segment there, that the John and Delenn fans. Now, I don't know if you guys remembered this or if you were involved in the online community back in the 90s or not, but there was a massive cater of John and Delenn shippers. Websites were set up on it. Usenet groups were dedicated to it. And they went nuts with the scene here.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
I did not know that.
Yeah. The short of it, though, is it's not just Sheridan who gave up his uniform. He gives up, well, pretty much the whole command crew does.
Yeah, and I snagged that, so I'll go ahead and play that.
Hello, Delenn. You know, I was thinking, if you couldn't come to the rebirth ceremony, well, the ceremony should come to you. I've given up something that really mattered to me. A uniform and everything that goes with it. What I've never told anyone before now. When you were hurt. When you were in my arms. I was ready to kill that guy with my bare hands. I realized I'd never told you how much I cared about you. How much you mean to me. I think it's time you knew that. I can no longer imagine. my world without you in it. I don't know exactly when or how it happened.
I think I have a problem.
So, Mike's afraid. Mm-hmm. Susan thinks she was in love with Talia.
And, who isn't?
Yeah. And Franklin has a problem.
Yep.
So, it's almost like we had a past, present, future kind of a thing going on there.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting with the comments about Delenn not being able to come to the ceremony. And I thought, if I was Delenn, I would have wanted to say, I didn't know we were having the ceremony.
Yeah.
You know, it's everybody has avoided it from the start. Her injury seems to have driven everybody to refocus a little bit for good. Mm-hmm. And then we get these four key characters coming in and confirming things that we've thought or known about, but making those things public. What a cool scene.
Yeah. I don't, you know, and I don't think that, I remember that Lanier said that it was too late to do it anyway.
Right.
Because once you start the process, it's got to be done in a certain amount of time. I'll tell you what, those Minbari, they are really obsessed with the clock.
Yeah. You know, or the rule book.
Yeah. But at any rate, the only human that was really resistant to it was Marcus.
Right.
The aliens didn't want anything to do with it, but the command staff, they seemed more than willing to do what they needed to do.
Yeah, and it seems that Delenn anticipated that.
Right. Once it's her turn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so what was her secret that she hadn't told anyone?
Was there one?
There was. Was it Raoul? Was it Lanier that meets the four? They come in. Mm-hmm. They come in and out of her room alone, which makes sense because they're sharing secrets. And then Lanier brings a message to them from her and says, essentially, in anticipation of this, she made a special gift for each of them, mm-hmm. and those gifts are in their quarters.
Mm. I would say that might count. And those gifts, the new Army of Light uniforms.
Mm-hmm.
And the way we're introduced to those uniforms was really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The way they stride onto the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And one other little tidbit of information. Did you notice a subtle little change to the command deck?
Oh, yeah.
When they came in. At the beginning of the episode, it was the Babylon 5 symbol with the wreaths, the laurel.
Right.
When they come in this time, it's the Babylon 5 symbol with the sword and the shield.
Yeah, the broadsword, you bet.
Mm-hmm. And I love the way they close it. Babylon 5 is back in business. They're online.
Well, there it, that's it. There it is.
Yeah.
And there it is.
It's a pretty effective reset. It's a pretty effective reset for after the struggles of the last three episodes.
Yeah, and now we're ready to move forward. We're rid of the Night Watch. Mm-hmm.
At least the ones we know about.
Well, if I recall, I don't think we'll see any more, too many more of those. We have a smart aleck computer, and everyone has told something that is bothering them, and they've all given up their affiliation with Earth Force for the time being.
Right. And, you know, most series, things would slow down a bit from here. For most series, they wouldn't have gotten to this point this early in the season to begin with. Babylon 5 does not slow down. So, folks, the roller coaster is going to continue.
Yeah.
You could say this is the new normal.
Yeah, it's a very powerful episode, though. Any closing thoughts, gentlemen? My voice is about gone.
No, a good solid transitional episode. Kind of almost the closing of one chapter, the opening of another.
Yeah, it is very transitional.
Yeah.
Well, then, what do we have next week?
Well, we have Sick Transit Veer, the 12th episode of the third season.
More passing.
Yeah.
Sorry, Sick Transit Veer, thus passeth the man. My Latin serves.
Ah, well, my Latin's a little rusty.
Same here. There's actually one last funny story to tell there. When I was studying Latin at university, our instructor was a crusty old Jesuit, and he threw a pop quiz at us. I was crushed when it came back. I got a 0.
Uh-oh.
However, he went out of his way to note that if the test had been in Spanish, I would have scored a perfect score. Yeah, sometimes that would get me in trouble with my Latin.
Okay, yeah, I can see that. I can see that.
Well, if there is nothing else for you gentlemen to add, shall we wrap up?
I think we should.
Let's do it.
Did we have any boom today?
Nah, not really. We had a few punches, we had a few knives, but no boom.
No boom? Not even when Garibaldi shot the computer?
That was more of a thud.
Oh, a thud, okay. All right. Is there going to be some boom tomorrow?
Probably.
There's always boom tomorrow.
Always.
Indeed. Well, good night, folks.
Yeah, we'll see you later. Say good night, JP.
Good night, JP.
Okay, throwback to Rowan and Martin. Actually, I love that show.
Podcast terminated.
Thank you for listening to the Babylon Project podcast. You can email Raul and Jim at thebabylonprojectpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook at the Babylon Project Podcast. On the internet, we are at babylonprojectpodcast.wordpress.com. To subscribe to the podcast, you can find us on iTunes, or you can subscribe to the RSS feed on the webpage.